Welcome to DevelopLex, a Middle Tech production hosted by me, Weston Lockhart, and Evan Knowles. This series will focus on the ins and outs of real estate development and investing, where we'll have the opportunity to sit down with the developers of our cities, veterans of the industry, and key people that have over time made a massive impact on communities and neighborhoods. The purpose of this series is to be able to bring a knowledge base to our audience beyond that of what reading a book or watching a how-to video ever could, and educate from those who have done it by hearing their stories, both good and bad, along the way. We feel that historically the learnings of real estate have been inaccessible without being connected, and we would love to open the doors to the next generation of doers, as well as shine a light on how visions of community have been brought to life. We hope you enjoy. Before diving in, we'll get a quick word from our sponsors. DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle-market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate. We are also sponsored by Community Trust Bank. Community Trust offers a wide variety of home loans, commercial loans, and small business loans to suit your financial needs, as well as mobile banking, internet banking, and bill pay. Their friendly and professional staff would love to assist you at one of their 6 Lexington locations. Community Trust Bank is committed to building communities built on trust. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, subject to credit approval. We are also sponsored by Lexington Pavement Sweep. Lexington Pavement Sweep is a full-service property maintenance company operating in central Kentucky, specializing in parking lot sweeping, day portering, landscaping, and snow removal. From established retail properties to construction sites and everything in between, whether your property needs a daytime presence or a nightly sweep, Lexington Pavement Sweep will be there to ensure your property is starting the day pristine. Lexington Pavement Sweep is proud to be a part of DevelopLex, bringing the best of the best to all listeners.
All right, welcome back to the DevelopLex podcast. You've got Evan Knowles and Weston Lockhart here, and we're looking forward to today's conversation with Biff Buckley. So he's a real estate investor, but that's selling him short, so we're going to let him tell his full story and what he's been able to accomplish with his life and how real estate is interwoven into that. So thanks for joining, Biff.
Thank you. I've always been involved in real estate, but have been involved intensely the last, say, 20 years. So I thought it might be good for our listeners if I could explain just a quick overview of my life, and then we can delve into some of the details. Born here in Lexington, 72 years ago next month. My dad came back from World War II, married my mom. They rented an apartment on Romney Road, a little one-bedroom unit, and we lived there for a year. And then they bought a new house on Cassidy Avenue, 300 block. And I grew up on Cassidy Avenue, which many of your listeners will know, but it's near Morton School and Cassidy Elementary. And at that time, this may be of interest, Cooper Drive was the end of Lexington. So I would take my BB gun and walk down to Cooper Drive, cross a fence, and be in a farm, which is now Turkey Foot Road, Shadeland East. And from there all the way to the river was farmland. So that's how old I am. but that was the end of town, at least from Tate's Creek Road's perspective. New Circle Road had just been built, but it was only half of what it is today. It was not a complete circle. So I have seen Lexington change. So I went to the local public schools and went to the University of Kentucky. And while at UK, even in my latter years of high school, I was super restless with the eternal questions of life. You know, the who am I? Why am I here? Is there a God? If there is, what's my responsibility? And it bugged me in a good way. And so after 2 years of college, I was doing fine academically, but I didn't have a vision, a direction, a compelling interest. And I decided, okay, I'm going to travel. This was the days of the hippies, the anti-war movement, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And as Bill Clinton famously said, I fully participated in my generation. And so I took off on a 2-year jaunt, hitchhiked all over Europe and the Near East, came back, bought a motorcycle, traveled all over the United States and Mexico, and interspersed that 2-year journey with working just to finance more time on the road. But what I was really looking for during that time were those questions of, you know, who am I? Why am I here? What's life all about? Why do I want to just get a job and do the normal routine? And so while I was gone, a number of my friends had become followers of Christ. And I came back and I was so surprised and so shocked. But there was something about their life that spoke to me. There was a peace and a joy that they had that I didn't have. So one day I was just talking to one of them about their newfound faith. And the way I describe it is something came over me, a knowing that the very things that I had rejected were in fact true. And those things I had rejected were that the question of, is the Bible true and reliable? I had answered that question, no. And is Jesus really the true, one and only, unique Son of God? And I had answered that question, no. But all of a sudden, this knowing came over me that I was wrong, and that those two questions needed to be answered with a yes. And that's when everything changed in my life. And all of a sudden, I had a desire to join the family business, which was an insurance operation, which I'll tell you more about. I had that desire. And I had a desire to settle down, had a desire to get married, and my restlessness was suddenly gone. And new curiosities to grow and learn in different areas emerged. So joined the family business. It was an insurance operation that my grandfather had started in the 1920s. And he did farming and some real estate investing, and had the insurance operation. And we insured cars and houses and trucks and commercial buildings, liability insurance, workers' comp, a little bit of life insurance, a little bit of health insurance. And so he started in the 20s. My dad joined after World War II. And so when I joined the business, there were 3 Buckleys, all named Benjamin Franklin. I'm Benjamin Franklin Buckley the 4th, so it made for some communication challenges, but we got through that. We were a very small operation. All the insurance agencies in Lexington were small. There was just usually one guy, and he might have an assistant. And so I joined, and they made me a partner within a couple of years, and just over time, we were able to grow the agency, and granddad passed away, and then my dad retired, and so I ran it as a sole owner for about 20 years, and then a younger sister joined me, Elizabeth joined me, and so she and I were partners for the last 15 years or so. And regarding real estate, here's what happened. When I first started in business, my dad said to me, son, he said, you can make a good living in the insurance business, but if you want to build a healthy retirement, if you want to build generational wealth, you need to think about something else. You need to really become an expert in something like the stock market or real estate or something else. He left the door wide open. But he said something that over time will build value so that you'll have something when you retire. You got to remember, this was pre-401k, pre-IRA, pre-any kind of pension. And so if you were an entrepreneur, you know, that's, you had to figure it out. So I took that to heart and I began to study some different things, and I really felt drawn to real estate investing. And so I would try to keep my standard of living low so that any extra dollars I had around, I could buy something, even a small house would be fine. In those days, small houses in Lexington were pretty cheap. So I began to get some experience with the real estate, with these really small properties, and I was managing it by myself. And then I was getting a little cocky, thinking, hey, you know, I can do this and run an insurance agency and run this real estate. And then there was going to be an auction on the courthouse steps, a bankruptcy auction, master commissioner sale. So there were two, at this point, the Winburn subdivision out Russell Cave Road had just been built. It was pretty much brand new. And a developer had built a number of sixplexes out there. And then he had gone through a divorce. And there was a terrible fight between he and his wife or ex-wife and over the division of the property. Nobody made any payments. The bank foreclosed on it. That's why it was at bankruptcy auction. Two sixplexes. So I did my calculations, figured out what I could afford to bid. And for any podcast listeners that may not know, at that point, to some extent still today, it's a rough area of town. But I thought, I paid $112,000 a piece for two sixplexes and was the high bidder. And so I was ecstatic, walked down to see Mr. Robert Stilts at the Bank of Commerce, which no longer exists, got merged into a number of different banks, but it was a local bank. And he loaned me the money, minimum amount down, because I'd gotten such a good deal on it. So I started trying to manage two sixplexes, and I only had experience at that point with maybe two or three single-family houses. And the quality of tenant that I could attract there was not very good. And all of a sudden, I found that I couldn't manage the properties. Remember, we had no modern technology. So someone would have to call me and say, I'm interested in looking at the property. And I would make arrangements I would show up, then they would not show. And that's a long haul from downtown Lexington out there. And so there's always something breaking, just 12 units, management intensive. And I'm trying to run and build the insurance operation, which had to be priority for me. And it just wasn't working. And the property was not performing well. So I sat back and I started asking myself the question, okay, Biff, do you really believe in real estate? Is this the way you want to go? Because this would be a good exit point if it isn't. And if you do believe in it, how are you going to do it and build and run an insurance operation and manage employees that are in the business, take care of your clients? And so the idea came to me to operate through partnerships. And from that day on, I have not done anything by myself. Everything has been in a partnership form, and it has worked well. In fact, when I sold my company and finally had time to really do something on my own, by that point, I was so spoiled by the beauty and the practicality and the simplicity of partnerships that I decided just to keep doing it. And I expanded it, brought in more partners, did more deals. And that's the only thing I'm interested in doing today. The only thing I own by myself are one single-tenant office building. And for obvious reasons, with a single tenant that has the whole building and takes care of all the expenses, there's really nothing to manage there. It's the only thing I own that I have any responsibility for. My partners, on the other hand, run and operate all the different investment properties I'm involved in, and the properties pay them a management fee for their services. So I probably make a little bit less than I would, definitely make less than I would if I was managing it on my own, but I have none of the responsibilities which frees me up to do the things that I want to do. So that's the quick overview of my life up to this point and my career in real estate. So you asked me questions.
Yeah, definitely want to dig into the partnership thing because we've had a few other guests bring that up. And I think I've also done that in my early real estate career is partner with others that are aligned with me long term and believe in the same vision that we do as a real estate company, but also people that bring something different to the table that you know we don't, different skill sets, different things that they enjoy doing. How do you view partnerships and what do you use as a way to vet, you know, anybody you go into business with?
Yeah. Well, obviously the vetting part is the challenge. And at some point, if we want to go into it, I can share a failure with you that was spectacular, spectacularly painful failure. But, you know, to find partners that you are aligned with in terms of values and that they have integrity and that they have skill. I am biased toward real estate professionals, which I don't. I consider myself a real estate investor with experience, but I'm not a professional real estate person that's done the studies, got the licensing. I've got a lot of experience, but I'm not, and I don't do it every day. And so I want to align with people that do. And I've got three primary partnerships that now or at some point I can go into with you and name names and places and guilty parties, but they're wonderful. They're friends, and I feel very blessed to be in partnership with them.
When you say partnership, are you in you co-own these properties, or are you using them as almost a vendor or for services? What is a partnership? Are you creating LLCs or what is that?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different kinds of partnerships. Well, let me even state it more broadly. There's three, the way I think of owning real estate is three ways. One is direct ownership, like I did with those two sixplexes, where I own it, it's in my name, I manage it, I sign on the debt, and I might even hire a professional manager, but I don't really have a relationship with them other than that one property that they're managing. That's direct ownership. The next approach would be partnerships, which with the kind that I do now with the direct ownership. And I'm going to come back to that. The third kind that I do a little bit of are syndications. And that is where a person or group of people identify a piece of investment property. It can be an office building. It can be a mobile home park. It can be self-storage. It can be multifamily. It can be office warehouse, but they identify a property, they have the expertise, they come, they raise money from investors. They're the syndicators. I don't have to put, I just put in my X amount of dollars. You know, typically they have a minimum of maybe $50,000, sometimes as low as $25,000. But some people put in $100,000 or more into each of these deals. But you don't have to sign any debt as an investor. You don't have any risk. And the syndicator gets a fee for managing it, and they get a promote or an ownership percentage just for putting the deal together. So this is not really a partnership. I mean, you could call it that, but I don't have I may or may not have a relationship with the syndicators, but if you want to invest in real estate, you don't have any experience, this is a great way to get some experience in some of these partnerships, some of these syndications. And I'm in several, and we can talk about specifics maybe later on. So let me go back then to the partnerships that I've done the most of. I'm 50-50 partners in most of these. My partners do the management. They get a fee. We both sign on the debt. We both participate in the upside equally. We both participate in the cash flow after the my partner's paid a management fee. We split everything 50-50, and we both make the big decisions about expansion, major repairs, refinance. Do we want to sell? Do we want to buy something else and kind of bolt it on to these properties? Now, those have been the best performing real estate investments for me. They are my preferred way of investing. And I'm involved in three of those.
Got it. And with those syndications, would you consider those to be kind of more of a local, like REIT, like a real estate investment trust? Is that kind of how you view those?
Or yeah,
why would you do that instead of a REIT?
Yeah, a REIT is a publicly traded. So the advantage to a REIT is that you can buy it one day and sell it the next, like a stock. The syndications I'm talking about are you're locked in. You have no control over when you sell. You decide you're going to be an investor. You put in your $50,000, your $100,000 in the deal, and it's hands off. You hopefully get a quarterly check, distribution check. And then the syndicator decides, okay, we're going to, if they're going to refinance after 3 years, if they're going to sell after 5 years, the typical life cycle of a syndication, if the asset is a single asset that the syndication owns, they'll typically go from 3 years minimum to 10 years maximum. And somewhere in that 3 to 10 year mark, they sell, they distribute, and they do it all again. And you can participate in the next round or not. Now, some of these syndicators have funds. They don't have a single asset. They have, some of you guys would know local people like Brett Collar of
Viking Fund.
Yeah. And Brett Setzer with his deals, and the gentleman that owns Eastland, mm-hmm. All the shopping centers. Can't think of his name for a moment, but he's got a fund. So those
right.
three guys have funds. Whoops, and they will raise $50 million to $150 million. And they will buy assets all over the United States. They'll take 3 years to fill out the fund. They'll run it for 3 years. They'll take 3 years to unwind it, and then you get your money back. That's a fund. But you can also just buy into a single asset syndication, and it just owns one location.
Got it. And me and Evan have talked about this. At some point, we'll probably have a Middle Tech fund that you can buy into, just by the way.
Really?
Be on the lookout for that.
Dream big. I like it.
Yeah. Be on the lookout for that. You mentioned earlier you had a very painful failure. I think part of learning is obviously failure. I think it's one of the most important parts of learning. But for our listeners, maybe we can try to prevent them from having some pains their own by listening to this. So can you talk about, that failure or other failures that you might want the audience to avoid if they could?
Yeah. Well, the one failure that I had that was really painful, that really cost me financially, I've been a couple of deals I got out of, didn't lose any money or only made a little bit. That I learned from, but that I don't consider them a failure. This one was a big failure. And basically, it was more than just a real estate play. It involved buying real estate in an adjacent county that had a business on it. So we were buying the business and the real estate. And I brought in a partner. Actually, I was invited into the deal by basically like a business broker, and was introduced to a person who had put the deal together, who was in that industry. He knew how to run that industry. And so he had the expertise. He was the professional. I was the investor. We were going to be 50-50, and we established two entities, one corporation to run the business, one LLC to hold the real estate. I felt like that the real estate was valuable enough because of its particular location, that if the business failed, we could always sell the real estate and at least make ourselves whole. That turned out to be a bad assumption. Over a period of 3 years, the person I thought was qualified to run it was not. And he basically ran it into the ground. I could only give limited attention to it because I was running the insurance operation. And, you know, by the time I told him I wanted out and had to get out, it was too late. And then then he disappeared, just disappeared. And I had to shut the business down, liquidate the business, had to sell the real estate. And of course, we had both guaranteed all the notes. So what they call joint and several liability, which meant that he 100% guaranteed and I 100% guaranteed. And when your partner's nowhere to be found, that means that you're on the hook for 100% of the loss. And it was a significant number that I had to come up with. Fortunately, I owned enough other real estate that I was able to liquidate a property that I had a good bit of equity in and write a check and pay it off. And so that was my big failure. So I think in hindsight, I think I was too aggressive. I didn't have enough humility. I was too cocky at that point. And I overestimated the ability of my partner, and he just did not have it. And we were not aligned on values. He didn't have people skills, didn't know how to treat employees. He was a rash risk taker.
And you talked there about getting cocky. And so, mm-hmm. you know, younger people that might have money, or it doesn't matter how old you are, if you have a streak of success,
yeah,
that can happen. And in real estate, I think there are ways to avoid that thinking with your heart or thinking with your ego before you think about, you know, the data behind a decision. How have you, after that happened, have you prevented that? Because we've had other guests come on the show and say, you know, one of their biggest tips is to, you know, think using data. Think using your head, not your heart, when it comes to real estate, because the real estate doesn't care what your heart says.
Yeah.
You know, it's about data. It's about the numbers. So how have you found you prevent yourself from getting cocky as you've had that failure and that pain going forward?
Yeah. I think one way is to throttle back. I have throttled back my ambition to a more sustainable, realistic level. So that I no longer, in fact, I'll tell one on Dudley Webb that he said to me, I don't think he would mind me saying this at all. We were at a CPAL meeting, Commercial Property Association of Lexington, and he was our guest speaker, and I was president of CPAL at that time, and it was my obligation to introduce him. And I said to him, while we were having lunch before he spoke, I said, what is the one thing that you wish you had done differently? This was after they had had their spectacular fall when Kentucky Central went under. This is not modern day, okay? So this was, I don't know, 25 years ago at least. Anyway, he said, Biff, I was so ambitious, I felt like it was my obligation to own the world. And he said, if I had just throttled back my ambition and been more selective about the deals that I did, I would have been fine. There's plenty of opportunity without getting overly ambitious. And so that stuck with me. One other thing is but to answer a little more, you know, you've got the data. Yes, real estate decisions are data driven, but there is a gut element about a deal. In other words, on paper, it can look good, but maybe some of your assumptions are faulty, and you don't know they're faulty. But they might be. So you get you have to have a certain amount of humility about this. And one thing I've learned is that the worst case scenario is not always the worst case scenario. It can be worse than your assumption of the worst case scenario. But fortunately, in our business, in the real estate business, inflation has bailed out a lot of poor investment decisions, which is one of the nice things about real estate. There is an escape valve, and it's called inflation. And it's bailed out many a bad or marginal deal.
Yeah.
And then the final thing, which I have alluded to, would just be I did not do enough due diligence on that partner that turned out to – I made assumptions about his ability to manage people and businesses that was more of a, hey, this is what I want you to be. This is the person I want you to be. Therefore, I'm sure you're that person, and we're going to have a great partnership because I really want to do this deal. So my head was not in a good place because I didn't do thorough, realistic due diligence on the partnership.
Yeah.
I would love to transition here to really the city of Lexington and where you see it going forward. But in order to do that, I think it would be helpful for the audience to know what your involvement and what your investment in the downtown area or just the city in general is. And so what are some of the more recognizable maybe buildings or businesses that you've been involved in that the audience can anchor on as we continue to go forward with the conversation about the future?
Yeah. Let me answer that by going back to the first partnership I had when the two sixplexes did not go well because of my inability to manage. I met a guy named Greg Sally. He lives in Bourbon County. Not too many people in Lexington know him. And we became partners about 35 years ago. That's when I sold the sixplexes and decided I had to figure out a better way of owning real estate and decided to go with partnerships. So over a period of about 10 years, Greg and I bought multifamily properties. And today, so today we own I think it's 272 units in four different locations. And he and his sons manage that for us. We've been in business partners 35 years and it's going great. None of these four locations are recognizable. The smallest would be a 27-unit project, and the largest would be 100-unit, total 272. When I sold my business, I got involved in a partnership with Anthony Humphreys. Some people might know him through his new brand is Eden Companies, and also has been known as a Campus Properties, Campus with a K.
Oh, yeah.
And Anthony and I bought a 143-unit property, and it's several buildings on near the UK campus in the Euclid, Aylesford, Linden Walk, Transylvania Park part of town, what I call the best residential UK property in town is right in that area near, you know, walking distance to Kroger's. And that's turned out to be a spectacular project, and Anthony and his team do a great job. And then when we recently sold one of our downtown buildings, which I do want to go back and visit, I took the equity and we exchanged into a 125-unit townhouse project at the corner of Fontaine and Richmond Road called Townhomes, and we renamed it Townhomes at Fontaine, and Anthony and his team are doing a great job on that. The third partnership that I would like to mention would be, I got another one I just thought of. Third one would be the Cowgill family. Buddy Cowgill and my father, Ben Buckley, became partners, I can't tell you how long ago, 40 years, 50 years, maybe 50. Anyway, my dad died almost 3 years ago, and Mr. Cowgill is alive and well and has brought a large number of his family in, and they have built a tremendous company here in town. They just call it simply Cowgill. They have some older properties that they keep up and manage well. They're developing new properties all the time. and they just do an excellent job. And so I'm involved, my family and their family are involved together in three projects, roughly 600 units, roughly 200 a location. And that has been an excellent partnership. The third partnership is a little different, and it was with my dad. My dad and I were partners in the insurance agency, and that was wonderful. He was my mentor, and it was wonderful. And then when I bought him out, I missed him a lot. And in terms of not as a dad, he was still my dad, and but I missed having that camaraderie of a shared for-profit enterprise together. And so one of the things that I tried to develop areas of insurance that I specialized when I had the insurance agency was commercial property. That was sort of my expertise. And so I started going to my clients when I would renew their policies and have that renewal meeting. I would have a standard conversation that went something like this. Here's your renewal policy. Do you see any changes we should make? And by the way, if you'd ever consider selling your property, I hope you'll let me know. I am interested in owning more commercial property. Well, I had that conversation with Foster Pettit, former mayor of Lexington, now deceased, and he owned the First National Building, which is now 21C, corner of Upper and Main Street, 16-story high-rise, the original high-rise in Lexington. And Foster said, yeah, I might be interested in selling. And I said, well, put something together for me and let's talk. So he put together this very elaborate notebook, very compelling, and put a number on it that I thought was reasonable. We negotiated a little bit, and I said to my dad, hey, you want to own a downtown office building? And he was real excited because as a boy, he grew up around that building. And it was, the original high rise. There was nothing else over two or three stories when that was built. So it was the marquee property when he was a boy. So we bought it, and it went well. We made enough after 1 year that I went to another client, Lawless, Wayne Lawless, and he and a gentleman named Gus Moss, two attorneys. Wayne was a real estate guy. Gus was an attorney. Gus Moss, they own the Security Trust Building, which is at the corner of Short and Mill, another 8-story old high-rise office building. And so I delivered my renewal insurance policy. He said, hey, Wayne, if you ever want to sell, he said, yes, I might be interested in selling. It turned out that we took the profits from the first year of operating the First National Building, and it was enough to make the down payment in purchasing Wayne's building. So all of a sudden, my dad and I, as a partnership, owned the two oldest high-rise buildings in town. And so that was kind of cool, and it was great to be in partnership with him. We hired a guy to run both of them full-time. Don Wiseman was his name. And so I was able to work through a manager who was there every day taking service requests, renewing leases. And so that's how we came. That's the fourth partnership that I want to mention.
Got it. And so you have the oldest high rises, and that was a really awesome experience. So you got a unique perspective on the downtown and have seen it grow over the years.
Yeah.
When you look at it now, what comes to mind? What excites you? What do you think about when you see it now? Wow. How far it's come?
I love it. I absolutely love what's happening downtown. And of course, I've been saying that every decade since I was a kid. And because I love our downtown. It is unique. And it's different from the suburbs, and it should be. It's got its own characteristics, its own personality, its own uniquenesses. And I love the walkability. I love all the changes that I've seen over the decades. I'm fascinated by this linear park that they're putting in from the Distillery District all the way up to 3rd Street. That's going to be so cool. And I just think we are very blessed to have a unique downtown, and we need to do everything we can to enhance it.
When you say unique, how do you think it differs from some other cities around the United States? Because I agree with you, it's very unique, but if I were to articulate it personally, I would say how dense Lexington is and how walkable a lot of the unique and entertaining and just leisurely parts of life are downtown. Restaurants, entertainment, theaters, venues, you know, whatever it might be, it's all very walkable and it's very clean. It's a very nice, clean city. That's how I would, you know, describe it to somebody, is it's just a really nice lifestyle.
Yeah.
What do you say is unique about it?
I agree with you, Evan. That's well said. It's not spread out. We don't have a lot of, at one time we had a lot of what some used to call urban blight. You know, just a lot of vacant buildings in terrible shape. Properties are being renovated and kept in good shape. And the diversity of businesses that are down here with the nightlife, we need more retail. That'll come in time. We need more residential. That's coming. I think the denseness and the walkability and how good a shape it's in is distinguished from some other cities our size and larger and smaller.
If you were to summarize, you know, we had a great conversation. It's been amazing. But if you were to summarize a piece of advice to the listeners that is maybe your key learning from your career that they could take away from this episode as we leave here, what would that be, you say?
Oh, gosh.
That's always a tough question.
That is a tough question. I would say, I mean, there's so many different ways you can answer that. I would say, on the professional front, I would say, do your job, whatever your job, whatever your chosen vocation is, do that, do it well, enjoy that. But find a means of investment that where you can grow generational wealth so that you make money with your left hand in your professional career, but then you've got to save some of that and channel it into some kind of investment. For me, it was real estate. And let that grow over time and create generational wealth. So on the business side, that's how I would answer that. On the personal side, I would say, you know, find out your why as a buzzword, your why are you? And so that goes back to the beginning of my story, you know, who am I? Why am I here? And so I feel like as a Christian, I feel a keen sense of responsibility for my town. And I would hope that others would have a sense of, let me call it ownership. I wish that every Lexingtonian felt a sense of ownership.
Skin in the game to make the city better.
Yeah. Look for ways. Look for nonprofits that you can join that will make the city better. Run for city council. Participate in partnerships that are buying and renovating properties to make the downtown better. I mean, what's going on in the Distillery District, the North Lyme, all the properties from Main Street to the north side of New Circle Road, that's what we used to call the tougher areas of town that are being redone. I am so excited about that. The old bus company, Gray Line Station, you know, to see things not fall into disrepair but being built up, and organizations too. Let's feel ownership and have that question of how can I make my city better? How can I love my city well? How can I serve my city well? So I think I would like to leave people with that as well.